The Hurricane blue line against Bayajo. It centers to Boldy, shoots and scores! Tyler Toffoli with a wicked one-timer ends the game in overtime. The Flames score three unanswered and defeat the Hurricanes 3-2.
Might not be how Daryl Sutter wrote it up, but his team is now 4-1 on the season after a 3-2 overtime win against the Carolina Hurricanes on Saturday night. They now have a light week this week, welcoming in the Pittsburgh Penguins on Tuesday. But the focus remains continuing to get better for this Calgary Flames team despite their strong start to the season. Welcome to Sportsnet today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Logan Gordon along with you from our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios in beautiful Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And yes, the Flames are 4-1 after a victory against the Carolina Hurricanes. And to help us break it down, we go to the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to welcome in our pal and our Flames insider for the Gemini Group and Gemini Group Home Renovations. It's Pete Labardius this afternoon. Lou, how are you?
I am good. Thank you kindly.
4-1 on the season for the Calgary Flames, and I said it coming in there. I don't think that's how they drew up that game in their minds against Carolina, but they come out of there with 2 points and a comeback victory.
So many nights, games, well, every night, games are in many cases broken down into 5-on-5, goaltending, and special teams. And I would suggest that the Flames definitely won two of those. One is factual, and I would suggest that Mr. Markstrom was far more key than Antti Raanta, who certainly helped the Flames' cause with the Brett Ritchie goal that was scored literally from the right wing corner on the end line. 5-on-5, was it a Picasso? Not necessarily. But Logan, one of the things I think people always have to remember when analyzing a game is the team that you're playing. And, you know, Carolina has not knocked on the door for a number of years now because they're not a really good team. And when you watch them in person, and you had an opportunity to do that yourself the other night, you understand how they use their speed, and they have plenty of it. And it's not just when you have the puck, it's when you don't. And they were a very connected team, 5-on-5. They have an excellent top four on defense. They've got good balance, as the Flames do, throughout their four forward lines. It's a really, really good team. So it was a matchup of two really good teams. And, you know, Calgary hung in it and got a great play up the boards by Rasmus Anderson, who set a career high as far as time on ice in the game is concerned with 27 plus minutes. And his second assist of the game, Tyler Toffoli, that was in and out of the back of the net before you could utter whatever phrase you wanted to come up with. And the Flames clawed their way back again from a 2-0 deficit, second time in the week that they were able to do that.
How did you see the Flames making adjustments? Because Pat talked to Rasmus after 20 minutes on the broadcast, and you know, Rasmus said, hey, look, they're pressuring us. They're hard on pucks right now. We got to find a way, you know, to start playing behind them and sort of turn it on them. How did you see the Flames doing that through the final 40? Because I definitely think they adjusted to the pressure better, Lou, but I don't know that it led to too many high danger chances for the Flames either.
Well, the one thing when the Flames were able to get, you know, some of those, I know that the people at Natural Stat Trick had the Flames with one 5-on-5 high danger chance. There might not have been, though, in this case, any more than three or four. They do such a good job, Logan. I always say a team is playing really well and really connected when you could take a photograph and see all five guys in the picture. And they do it extremely well. And the times when Calgary was able to establish a little something-something and some of their, you know, better ozone shifts is there were times in that game when even when you crossed their blue line with possession and it had to be a short chip to the end of the rink, that's what you have to do. Because they do such a good job of clogging things up, and the Flames were not having a lot of success at their line, or it was not easy to get through the middle of the ice against them. So, you know, you're always trying to place pucks in spots where you can get them back. In the likes of Slavin and Burns and Shea and, you know, Brett Pesce, they get to pucks quickly too and transition really, really well. So it was not an easy game, 5-on-5. Very much a low event type game on the whole. Reminded me somewhat, Logan, of the game that they played in Calgary last December the 9th. Mm-hmm. Carolina won 2-1 in overtime. And I just think with two teams that have a lot of similarities and do a lot of the same things well, I'm not surprised you end up in a game that was like that.
Yeah, Carolina has some of those strengths, and I think you kind of saw it even out a lot more down the final stretch. The first 20 won't be anything that Daryl Sutter is too pleased with from his group. They get the power play goal late, which helps, you know, when you look at the scoreboard, but I don't think Carolina's got anything to worry about when it comes to their CFF. They defended really well. Sure, they'd like to have, you know, found something on those four power play opportunities they had, but I think the Flames, as you said earlier, Lou, just sort of stuck with it and found a way to get it to overtime. And at 3-on-3, I mean, it's anybody's game at that point.
It is, for sure. But the biggest point that we haven't touched on is the Flames' 4-minute penalty kill. And all night long, they won the special teams battle.
Yeah.
They scored a power play goal, and with 6:14 to go in the third in a 2-2 tie, they end up, you know, with one of their best penalty killers in the penalty box for a 4-minute high sticking penalty. And they didn't do a good job. They did a brilliant job. They gave up virtually nothing. I can only really remember one pretty good chance from the flank, which Markstrom handled. And doing a good job as a goalie, as Daryl pointed out, and I pointed out a couple of times, you know, during that 4-minute stretch, well, early in the penalty kill on the first of 2 minutes, Jacob does a wonderful job getting to a rim after a good denial of the entry that forced a rim. That led to a clear. There was another time where there was some decent possession on the perimeter, and they ended up with a little flip shot where Jacob went, our guys need a change. So he gloved the puck, held it. Those are really little things that make a massive difference in those kind of scenarios. So, yes, he made a lot of great saves. I think some of Jacob's best work, at least from my standpoint, was the 3 or 4 10 bellers he made at 2-1 in the first period when the game could have gotten to 3 or 4 or 5. So specialty teams was superb, won that battle. They win the goaltending battle, but that 4-minute stretch with the game on the line, those 10 guys who killed those penalties and the goalie did a terrific job.
And we talk about it so much, Lou, on these hits, about not only if you don't score on a power play, what it can do for momentum, but if you get a good penalty kill, what it can do for momentum too, and how that can swing the game. And, you know, it's not just about not letting Carolina score. That's obviously a big part of it, but, you know, it's the energy, it's the boost it gives your team, it's all of that, because you're going to be tense for those 4 minutes. You're late in the game. You haven't generated a lot of high-scoring chances. You know as well as anybody, a goal at this point in the game could be detrimental to the result. To go and get that 4-minute kill, like you mentioned, with Blake Coleman being the guy in the box, we talk about the momentum of special teams all the time, and I think that was as good of an example as any.
Well, good ones, and in that case, great ones, will always feed the momentum, and bad ones even when you go into, let's say, some power plays, it can kill it real fast too. But absolutely, it creates energy, and it's really, really important to how you go about your business, and it changes games and more than, like you said, just, you know, the end result. The end result the other night was particularly satisfying because the next goal was going to win that game. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But I think it also played a massive role in, you know, the couple minutes that were left and how they closed it out after they killed off the 4 minutes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a positive for this team. It continues to be a big bright spot for them, and it's something that no doubt Daryl Sutter and his coaching staff will want to continue. We're chatting with Peter Labardius, our Flames insider. You're on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. He's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. I wanted to talk about Jacob Markstrom for a second with you here, Lou. First shot of the game for Carolina goes in. It's a nice move by Sebastian Aho to finish things. But you heard a groan from some in the crowd, another early goal past Jacob Markstrom. And, you know, hey, the questions have been there about the start for Jacob Markstrom. He really shuts things down the rest of the way and has one of his best performances of the year. I wanted to play this clip from Jason LaBarbera. He was on the Flames Talk post-game show with you guys on Saturday night, and he was asked by Derek, I believe, about, you know, Jacob's ability to bounce back from those bad moments or from those lackluster starts, and how how he views it and how he sees what he's getting from his goaltender. Here's Jason LaBarbera, and I'll have you just pick up on the other side of it, Lou. Here's Jason LaBarbera on Markstrom bouncing back in games.
Well, to me, it says he's elite, you know, and obviously as a goalie, you never like getting scored on in the first shot or early in games. Like, you know, mentally, you're always telling yourself, like, you get scored on early, you got, geez, I got to grind the rest of the way of this game, right? Because, you know, but that's what makes him who he is. You know, you're able to stick with it and trust your process and trust your reads and trust what you're doing, and you're not panicking. It'd be easy to, you know, for a younger guy, and I'm sure when he was a younger guy too, you panic a little bit and you're like, okay, I gave up an early one again, and, you know, and you start chasing the game a little bit, but you just, that's the experience, and that's why he's a top guy in the league.
I think in any performing industry, Logan, and that's the toughest position in the game, it's how you handle adversity and how you respond to it. You know, if you think about our business some nights, there's some nights in the first 3 or 4 minutes where you can't get anything out of your trap the way you want. So does that wreck your whole show, or do you bounce back? It's different. There's way more pressure. There's way more on the line. I'm not trying to make the comparison that way, but the best people in performing industries, people are going to make mistakes and they're going to have tough nights. And, you know, everyone's not going to be dressed exactly the way you wanted it when you came, you know, out onto the ice or from behind the curtain or go on the stage or open up a microphone. But what do you do with it when it doesn't start very well? And, you know, Jason LaBarbera said it best, and it is a test, and it does come with experience. And he said as well earlier on a question that I think I asked him out of the gate is, he said, well, it's very cliche, and he even said it in that answer. You got to trust yourself, and you got to trust the process. And everybody in every line of performance work knows when they're feeling it and when they're not. Everybody does. And certainly so does he. But your ability in goaltending to take a less than stellar start or a tough goal and not let it ruin the rest of your night, I think, is the great separator between the elite and not the elite. And I'd add to it this way, Logan, in sports, there are a lot of teams who, when it starts well or they score first, you know, that's always optimal, for sure. I call them front runners. There's a lot of good front runners out there. Championship teams have to be able to do it every different way and believe that they can. Individually, it really isn't much different.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that we've heard Daryl Sutter say, hey, you know, these guys need to get into a rhythm. Guys like Jacob need to play games, and they've practiced more than they've played. That's an unusual trend to start a season, and it kind of continues this week. We'll obviously be at Pittsburgh tomorrow, but then a full 3 days off before Edmonton. It's hard for anybody to get into a rhythm when it's been as, you know, last week was a pretty typical NHL week, but, you know, for the most part, it's been an unusual start timing-wise for this season.
It most certainly has. They had to wait a little while to get in. Now, it's been a pretty decent every second day, or certainly, you know, Saturday to Tuesday scenario, but this week in particular is different. And, you know, I asked Daryl about the schedule. I think my second last pregame chat with him, or maybe just before, and I have yet to talk to a coach that probably for the most part wouldn't like to get in a rhythm of almost playing every second day, especially when you're not traveling. It's different when you are, and we know that this team hasn't. They've played one road game, and it was in Edmonton on the first Saturday night of the season. So there will be some concern about the amount of time in between the games. It would be far more welcome, Logan, if they were coming out of, shall we say, a road trip, you know, where you maybe didn't have very much practice time and you wanted to get some more of it. They've had lots of it. The one thing that it might be helpful for is for someone like Noah Hanifin, who left today partway through practice. He's certainly not been feeling 100%. I don't know if it's, you know, just illness or more than that, or, you know, one of those things that you just can't quite put behind you, and the minute you push it, it rears its ugly head. So, you know, if the team's got a little something going on, and I have every indication that it is, that might be the only part of it that's beneficial. But the rest, not so much.
Did want to touch on that with you as well. Noah Hanifin was back in the lineup. Just the difference that you saw in the Flames' decor having number 55 back there. He didn't play as much as his partner, Rasmus Anderson, did, but it sure seemed like the Flames were in a better groove defensively with their three pairings having Noah back in the lineup.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
How many games have the Calgary Flames lost this year?
One.
Who didn't play in that game?
Noah did not play in that game, Noah Hanifin.
So again, I'm having a little fun with it, Logan, but I just value your defensive core so much. I just think it's such a massive part of separating teams and why they are good. And, you know, when your best attribute, when you're at your best as a group, is how you check. Well, the minute you take somebody out of their normal spot and you ask more and you take a really good player out of a really important position and it affects both sides of special teams, it's a big deal. It certainly was not the reason they lost to Buffalo, so I probably shouldn't even gone down that road. But it's just so different for any group. You know, the one thing, even, you know, to the west of us in Vancouver, now they're off to a terrible start. The house is going to crash there. Logan, is anybody talking enough about the fact that the other night they're down Myers, Quinn Hughes, and Travis Dermott? you show me another team in this league that's going to be without three of their top six guys on the back and not pay a price. You're just gonna.
Mm-hmm.
It's checking is too important a part of the game. It affects your special teams. You know, obviously Quinn Hughes is their best guy, but Tyler Myers is a 20-minute-a-night guy. Now you ask way more from other people. They're probably not in a position. It's not necessarily the deepest part of their group to begin with.
Yeah, you got guys playing with guys they're not used to, et cetera, right?
Yes, and that's why Daryl always talks about not individuals back there, but pairs.
Yeah.
Pairs up front, especially pairs on defense. How do you work with one another? How do you play off one another? It is so, so important. So, you know, hopefully Noah's going to be okay and ready to go tomorrow. You know, part of the Flames' journey this year is I'm sure they're going to be dealing with that type of stuff potentially more than they did last year when they lost 71 games, I believe, to injury, and 20-plus of those were to Tyler Pitlick. So, you know, that's part of the equation. But you lose somebody who plays 20-plus for you on a nightly basis, you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it.
We'll talk more about them tomorrow, but I guess just your excitement level when Crosby and company come to town, Lou.
I'm always excited. I just feel so fortunate that I've had an opportunity in my career to, you know, watch Sydney, whether it was in the Olympics in 2010 with my own two eyes, the Memorial Cup that I called that he played in back in 2005. I've made many mentions of my first ever sit-down interview and opportunity with him. He's everything about this game that I appreciate, respect, how he carries himself. He is absolutely a great player. He's got more than 10 points. Again, the Penguins are always a lot of fun. I have great admiration for Mike Sullivan.
Yes.
I think he's one of the best coaches in the NHL, without a doubt. He's been handed a lot to deal with the last number of years, and yet somehow, some way, because of their great leadership, because of their structure, because of their coaching, you know, they're always in the mix. So absolutely, I will be taking notes and watching very closely what happens tonight in Edmonton, and will treasure the one and only in-person viewing I get. And as he gets a little older, I think even when you're just somebody that covers the game, they mean a little bit more, because he's not going to, like, I think there's still lots left, but he's not going to be around forever. He's not 20 anymore.
No, it's not Sid the Kid anymore.
No. It is. Sid was a grown up when he was a kid, but
yes.
Now even the age represents that he's not a kid anymore.
Still, they haven't lost in regulation yet. The Penguins 4-0-1. Are up the road in Edmonton tonight, getting set to take on the Oilers at 6 o'clock tonight on Sportsnet television. If you want to get a look at the Flames' next opponent, we'll chat more about them tomorrow, sir. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Always appreciate the time, pal.
Okay, thank you kindly.
There you go. Peter Labardius, our Flames insider. He's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit Gemini Group. .ca. And while things are going good in Calgary, Penguins are doing pretty well. We'll see them tomorrow night. Things aren't going so well for the Vancouver Canucks. Winless in 6 games, and they get to welcome in the Carolina Hurricanes tonight. Infighting, it seems, at all levels of the organization. And how do you fix it with an 0-4-2 start? We'll check in with the Vancouver Canucks. Bick Nizar from Sportsnet 650 joins me next to talk some Canucks hockey here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Things aren't going well for the only winless team in the NHL right now. The home opener was not a success for the Vancouver Canucks. They lost 5-1 to the Buffalo Sabres. And there seems to be an issue everywhere you look. How do they get out of this? What's happening with Vancouver? We'll ask all of that and more to our next guest as we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in our pal from Sportsnet 650. He is the co-host of the People's Show, and you find him on Canucks Post Game as well. Bick Nizar, kind enough to give us some time this afternoon. Bick, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Logan. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking the time today. I know it's a busy one for you. You got your show, the game day for you guys as well. Look, never easy to start a season 0-4-2 for the Canucks. I know that five-game road trip was tough, but I'm not sure I could have dreamed up a worse start for a team than what we've seen for Vancouver so far.
No, absolutely not. And it's also, you know, the phrase I've used here on our station and on the post-game shows is, it's not even just that they're losing, it's how they're losing. It's like being in the relationship. It's not what you said, it's how you said it. And it is going really, really badly. They are, you know, there's so much focus on the start of the year after what happened last year in the first 25 games under Travis Green. The players wanted to be judged on what happened at the start of the year as well. And they've had these leads, and when other teams raise their level to engineer their own victories, the Canucks have wilted, and the Canucks have not even just had pushback, like they haven't raised their level to match or surpass the other teams, and it's manifested in the 0-4-2 and the vibes completely going wrong early on in the season.
How tense was the home opener? We wondered what the reaction would be from the Canucks fan base coming off of that road trip. What was it like at Rogers Place there for the home opener against Buffalo?
Yeah, I think there were some nerves going into it, and I think you could even see it from the coaches and the players just on the pregame introductions. But look, I'll give the fans credit. Everyone was doing their part. They cheered, and it felt like, okay, we can go ahead and play the game. And then that first power play or first penalty kill goal goes in for the Sabres, and it just felt like it let the air out of the building. They played well in the second period, and like the fans are just begging for something to rally behind. Connor Garland scored that goal, and it feels like, okay, hey, the third period, they can build on something. But you see how it ends in that second period, you know, Shen Miller kind of going off the ice, and I don't know if that was a signal for everyone that, like, here comes a nervous third period. And that last 20 minutes, it was in, like, myself and Sat Shaw doing the post-game show, it was kind of an out-of-body experience, just experiencing the last 20 minutes and just having to decompress afterwards after the post-game show and hearing all the reaction from fans and the phone lines and the text inbox and just kind of understanding, like retaking stock of where everyone is mentally about this. Like Saturday night was a real out-of-body experience that I'm not sure how many people are going to forget what that was like.
You talked about it a bit there, the trend of blowing leads and having, you know, subpar or even bad third periods for this group. And I hear Bruce Boudreau early on in the season talking about his team not being, you know, mentally strong and being, you know, fragile when it comes to that. How concerning is that from someone that covers the team when those are the kind of words and trends that you've seen so early on in the season?
They're naturally concerning because, you know, in the arena of pro sports, you want your teams to be mentally strong. But it's also the truth. They haven't been mentally strong. We've gone through this a couple of seasons now that we see this group is either A, not prepared to play, or they lose leads, or they have bad training camps. And this is the president of the organization saying that over the weekend on After Hours, saying that they had a bad training camp. All of these things are the same issue. Whether you want to talk about bad PK, bad starts, can't close out games, it all comes down to just a natural competitive spirit for me. And that's part of the mental makeup of a player, the mentality of a team, how that permeates through the rest of the group as well. These are all the same issues. So you can relate it to the poor start last year, the PK struggles last year. They're clicking at 55.6%, which is actually worse than what we saw last year. It's 32nd in the lead once again. So all these things are the same issue. And Bruce Boudreau just says the truth. And for some reason, people get a little irked up by the truth, especially us in the media, because it's like, oh, wow, like mentally weak, you mustn't say that. Yeah. He's saying the truth, and yeah. It just manifests in different ways.
let's talk about Bruce. I think that's a really interesting subject in Vancouver. Obviously, he got up to the hot start last year. The Bruce There It Is was one of the cooler things around the league when you talk about interactions with a coach. But I don't know. I get the sense when I heard Jim Rutherford on Saturday, Bick, that I really don't feel like that's his guy, and he's sort of sticking with it because, well, I can't get rid of the guy. He had a good season last year. He has the team option for this season. But I don't know. Am I off on that? Do you guys get a similar sense around there? Because it feels like this is a guy that doesn't mesh well with the management group that's in there right now.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between meshing well and what is the long-term vision of the team. And, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say things are meshing well. And it was one of the concerns you had coming into the season. If you're doing, like, stability rankings in the organization, well, when the coaching staff has a one-year deal, that's not a stable spot. The captain of the team has a one-year deal or 1 year left on his deal. That's not stable. And you need resolution to this at some point. Now, you hope wins kind of calm the waters and you can come to a resolution through that. But when you have a zero in the win column, that's a problem. But if Bruce Boudreaux came out and started winning games, I think the idea of what the long-term vision of the organization may have materialized. But I also look at it from a management view and kind of a job preservation view. And look, Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin have barely been on the job, so we don't need to have the conversation of job preservation. Mm. But if you commit to the coach, you are playing one of your cards. And so they haven't played any of their cards there. They say, hey, this is the coach that was here. When we arrived, we haven't even been able to hire our own guy. Technically, from a job preservation point of view, if you're talking from a GM's point of view here, if you just let this play out and then hire a guy, technically extends the lifeline of what you get to do as a manager and what you get to do as president of hockey operations. So I can understand why they chose this route. It just means you have to exist in the turbulent spot. And I think even the management group couldn't have foreseen 0-4-2 at the beginning of the year and the way it's transpired that we see fans openly revolting at the arena. Because you just think, hey, if we're just 500 till December, everything will be calm. Well, they're not even close to that right now.
Is replacing the coach mid-season, if this doesn't get back on track, a viable option in your mind to fixing things for the Canucks?
I just don't know what it's going to solve, right? Like,
okay.
I think it's the lever that we all rush to jump at and
100%,
say,
yeah.
Okay, that's that's the thing that you're supposed to do when a team loses. The first thing we look at is a coach losing the room. Well, he hasn't even coached 82 games yet. So how quickly can you lose a room if you're Bruce Boudreaux? It just like the line of logic doesn't really add up for me. And, you know, for GMs, I subscribe to the theory that no GM should be able to hire three coaches. We saw that happen here with Jim Benning. Why should players get three coaches? And for me, this is about the players now. Once we remove elements from the equation of management group and you decide on a new vision, once you remove the element of Travis Green and change the coaching staff, you go to the next element in the equation, that is the players. And we haven't seen enough real surgery being done to this group. And it goes back to the same thing I was just mentioning earlier. The mentality of the team, has it ever really improved? Has it ever been at a regular standard that needs that's required in the NHL, not just to win playoff rounds. Like we're talking about just getting to 500 at this stage.
Yeah.
And the biggest focus for me should be on the players. Will something happen to Bruce Boudreaux here in the season? Look, if results are what they are, obviously that becomes a big factor. He hasn't necessarily made a lot of great decisions for me to begin this season. You know, scratching some veteran players. Connor Garland was playing decently. Kyle Burrows comes out of the lineup, who's playing decently and fighting and competing, doing all the things they're supposed to do. I imagine that irked a couple of players in the locker room of kind of sending these messages this early in the season. But, you know, the decision in a six-game sample size relative to the history of success Bruce Boudreaux has had in this league, winning regular season games, I look at that and say it's not necessarily just on Bruce right now, but we know the realities of what this business is in professional sports, and coaches tend to lose their gigs at some point.
We're chatting with Bick Nizar from Sportsnet 650, co-host of The People Show. And you can find him on Canucks postgame as well on Sportsnet 650. Canucks and Hurricanes go tonight from Vancouver. A couple more for you here, Bick. And I was curious, I know a lot was made of it on social media. I mean, what isn't made a big deal on social media nowadays? But between Luke Shen and JT Miller sort of, I don't even want to say arguing. To me, it just looked like two veteran guys having a serious discussion on Saturday night after the, I believe it was the second period, came to an end there. Was that a big deal to you? Was that apropos of nothing, or is that just one of those things that, hey, look, the team's winless right now. People are going to magnify and try to find things where they're maybe not even there.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I think I was more surprised that it came out on the ice rather than in the hallway or in the dressing room.
Yeah.
But I just think that's two competitive guys just trying to hash something out and say, hey, why isn't this happening? And when you add the context of now this is six games or five and a half at that stage, yeah, like this is what losing looks like. I look at that and I just say that's not that big of a deal. Cooler heads will ultimately prevail. I think I'd be more worried if that stuff wasn't happening, because you're not supposed to accept losing. It's supposed to be sniping at each other a little bit, and it's taking that emotion and translating it into a positive performance. We'll see what happens tonight versus Carolina, getting ready for Seattle and Pittsburgh in the next week here. But I didn't have a big deal with that. I know there's just a general idea that everything should be rosy and every teammate should be friends all of the time. But to me, you want some of that level of accountability, and that's how it looks.
On the ice, it's going to be a bit of a different look for the Canucks tonight. I know that the injury news wasn't great today. I believe week to week was the status for Travis Dermott and Quinn Hughes. No disrespect to Travis, but I think obviously the big news there is Quinn Hughes. And I know the back end has already been, you know, going through some injuries this year. Just how big of a loss is it for this team to lose Quinn Hughes for any period of time, Bick?
I would argue that I think there might be better players on this team, and Quinn Hughes is fantastic. But as far as most value to the team, I think it might be Quinn Hughes. Like, if Elias Pettersson goes down, you know, a fully optimal JT Miller, like, he's put up 99 points in this league. Bo Horvat can be a successful center in this league. If Quinn Hughes goes down, the depth behind him falls off real fast. And Thatcher Demko, look, if he goes down, Spencer Martin had a nice three-game cameo last season. And overall, the goaltending department for the Vancouver Canucks has historically been a success under goaltending coach Ian Clark. So there's a certain drop-off there. You say, okay, this can sustain for a little while. But going from Quinn Hughes to now, you know, Guillaume Breezeball gets called up. He's going to be in the lineup tonight. Oliver Ekman-Larsson has some struggles sometimes. You know, when he's on the power play, he can look really good, but you know, he's had his struggles since arriving in Vancouver. And then it's a young player in Jack Rathbone, who a lot of people are excited about, but we're talking really small NHL sample size, and he tends to make a few mistakes. And it just the talent gap between Quinn Hughes and the rest of his decor is massive. And so him being on the lineup for week to week, we'll see how long that actually turns out being. It started as a maintenance day, and now it's he tries to play through it playing 28, 29 minutes a night, and you see where it is now. Hopefully it's shorter term than longer term, but it's a serious worry, because the thing that they struggle the most at is moving the puck. It hasn't really translated so much so far this season, but if you put them out of the lineup, how will teams start to forecheck this team, especially tonight, Carolina, who can skate with anyone in the league, and how much pressure will they put Vancouver under?
Two more for you. One guy I wanted to ask about, because I was, extremely intrigued by the signing going into the off season. I know it's a short sample size, but what can you tell me about Andrei Kuzmenko and his six games as a Canuck so far?
Yeah, he's fun. I'll be a bit. I was a little skeptical. You just never know how it's going to work out for KHL players translating into the NHL. And anyone was expecting, you know, a Panarin or Kaprizov type, but the also fears you get like a Vadim Shipachev situation. But no, he's been fun. The skating looks like it holds up alongside NHLers. He's not exactly fleet of foot, but he keeps up, and you know, the shot looks really good. I think the dash five right now in his column is probably harsher than the stat might suggest, because he hasn't been terrible defensively. But he's learning the NHL game, and he shoots a ton, and it's a good shot as well. I imagine he'll get some goal-scoring luck here. I think it's 19 or 20 shots so far through the six games, just the one goal, which was a tap-in on the power play. But we saw how effective that shot can look in preseason, and it looks NHL level, and every player you talk to has just been glowing about it. And, you know, when players are unprompted talking about a player's skill set, I always kind of take note of that. And so I think the goals will come for Andrei Kuzmenko at some point.
Last one for you. We talked a lot about some negatives that haven't gone well for Vancouver. That's obviously going to be the case when you're 0-4-2 to start a season. But give me some bright spots, something that's impressed you, a player that maybe has stood out for you so far in the six games. If you're a Canucks fan listening here in Calgary and you're trying to you know, look at a glass-half-full approach heading into tonight, where does Biknazar go?
Yeah, I'll go to another Russian winger, actually, Vasily Podkolzin. Like, he's drafted 10th overall in 2019. It's taken some time for him to get here. And last season, like, there were encouraging signs, but he looked like a rookie last year. And you see the rawness. And so far through these games, he's got 2 assists. The ice time thing is maybe that's I've been more focused on, because it's kind of gone up and down. He's played 10 minutes. He's played 11 minutes in a couple of games here. Now, some of that has to do with power plays, but how much of that is a young player trying to earn a coach's trust? But he has looked full value for being that 10th overall when he was selected, because he impacts the game in so many different ways, and he looks like he's got a defensive presence to him as well from the wing, which is fantastic to see, and he's committed to that side of the puck. And fans have been excited to see this guy eventually arrive, and I think it's a growing profile for a player who hopefully the stats start to turn around, but he is shooting the puck, and it is one of the bright spots. Like, it just doesn't look like a lot of bad things happen when Vasily Podkolzin is on the ice. So that, to me, is a big win for the organization right now.
Vic, really appreciate the time, man. I know you got a show to do this afternoon and you got a game tonight. Appreciate the time as always, man. Hope we can do this again soon.
Anytime. Let's hope it's a winning streak next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, pal. Take it easy. Hey, have a great show.
Thanks,
Vic. There you go. Biknazar from Sportsnet 650 joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The Vancouver Canucks and the Carolina Hurricanes go tonight. An 8:30 puck drop on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 360. Part of a doubleheader on Sportsnet tonight that starts at 6 o'clock. Penguins and Oilers. Chance for Flames fans to get a look at Sidney Crosby and company before they are in town tomorrow night. Other teams in action. 5 o'clock, you get the Stars and the Senators. Capitals, Devils, Blues, and Jets. St. Louis 3-0 to start the season. Keep an eye on them. And then at 8 o'clock, the Maple Leafs are in Vegas to take on the Golden Knights. Can they avoid the Vegas flu and pick up a win against the 4-2 Golden Knights? That is your six-game NHL schedule. Of course, mentioned it, Flames and the Pittsburgh Penguins go tomorrow night from the Scotiabank Saddle. On that one, a regular 7 o'clock puck drop from the Dome. Pat Steinberg and Pete Labardius with your 6 o'clock Flames warm-up. Then, of course, Derek Wills and Pete Labardius have the call right here on Sportsnet 960 at 7 o'clock, Penguins and Flames. I really don't know what to expect tonight between the Canucks and the Carolina Hurricanes. I mentioned it with Bick there if you missed it. Injury news, not great for the Canucks. Travis Dermott and Quinn Hughes are week to week right now. I believe it was Brock Besser. Let me go and double check. What did Boudreaux say today? Stillman and Besser day to day. So you're already without a couple key players, and Hughes won't play tonight. Besser won't play tonight, and that's a good Carolina team. I know the Flames beat them on Saturday, but that's a very good Carolina team that is elite when it comes to pressuring the opposing team in their own zone and getting them to create mistakes. Can a Vancouver team that's, you know, already going through it find a way to raise their game against Carolina tonight? I got to be honest with you. I don't like the chances for Vancouver to bounce back in this one. That seems like a tough spot to end your six-game losing streak, but you never know. In the NHL, stranger things have happened. It's just been a disastrous start there in Vancouver, and I don't think anything that the coach or the GM, or I guess not the GM, I guess the president of hockey ops, Jim Rutherford, said Saturday night did anything to quell any of the noise. And if you've been on social media for any period of time in the NHL world, you know just how crazy Canucks Twitter can get at the best of times, let alone when you're on a six-game losing streak. The noise and the pressure is on for the Vancouver Canucks. Can they snap that streak tonight? We will find out a little bit later on. That's going to do it for Sportsnet today. A big thank you to Biknazar for joining us. Peter Labardius, as always, kicked off the program. You can find the podcast up at sportsnet.ca/960 or wherever you get your podcast. Shout out to Cam and Taylor on the board this afternoon. The Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich is next, followed by some Flames talk later this afternoon with Pat Steinberg. Don't miss it. It's all coming up here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.